Ozone.
Welcome to the Ozone Podcast, featuring Jaguars.com senior writer John Osier and Jaguars executive producer Dave DeCandis.
And we're going to be joined this week by Jaguars head coach Doug Marone. Usually in the podcast, what Dave and I do is we talk a little bit at the top. We sort of preview the guest. What I wanted to say this week was usually with Doug, when we had him on this time of year, when we were talking to him, we would talk to him about the football team. The offseason program just got over with. We'd usually be going over position groups, what he thinks of Gardner Minshew, how he feels prepared for the season. But there's been so much going on with the COVID-19, with the Black Lives Matter, and with Doug being so candid and so out front on a lot of these things, that we wanted to spend this week's podcast more talking to him about those issues. He's talked about football in some conference calls. There's been plenty of stories written about his thoughts on the team. You can find those somewhere else. But for this week, we're going to talk to him about what I'm sure is a important, odd, and even life perspective changing offseason for Doug Marone. So without further delay, here's this week's Ozone Podcast interview with Jaguars head coach Doug Marone. Doug, I'll be honest, with the podcast, I had a lot of questions about how you got into coaching, a lot of background stuff, but with the events of the last few weeks, it feels remiss not to talk about that first. And I'm just curious, I assume it goes without saying that you probably feel like the last 10 days or so, maybe as important on a lot of levels as any you've dealt with as a head coach. And is that right? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I think you have to, you know, in these last, you know, 10 days, and you know, right after it happened, the first team meeting it was brought up, you know, because, you know, I think anyone that is able to see the video of the murder of George Floyd, you know, doesn't have an impression of that is really not human. So, you know, it was brought up, and then it really kept a momentum about itself that, you know, we normally didn't have a team meeting on a Tuesday, but we had a team meeting again, you know, and kept going with these team meetings, you know, to have, you know, these difficult discussions or tough or uncomfortable or whatever word you want to use that showed, you know, a lot of emotion, you know, from everyone, you know, anger, frustration, you know, confusion on, you know, what's next, what do we do, and really trying to open that up. So for me, football needed to take a step back, you know, or actually for a better line would be, you know, football needed to, you know, go on the sideline. You know, it wasn't part of, you know, what we were trying to accomplish. What we were trying to accomplish is, you know, listening, you know, and that was a big thing with the players because, you know, some of us don't know, you know, what it's like, you know, because we are white and we don't understand, you know. So for me, it was a tremendous learning experience. One that I was able to see through someone, you know, other people's eyes. I thought our players did an outstanding job of, you know, communicating their feelings, communicating the stories of what's, you know, of things that have gone on, you know, from them, not just from, you know, a standpoint of one incident, but, you know, multiple things that really take up, you know, a whole graph of A to Z, just basically on, you know, racism, you know, in this country. So, you know, I tried to learn, you know, from my past and that, you know, for me as a head coach and me as a leader, you know, I wanted to create, you know, lines of communication or platforms or whatever you want to say, you know, with our team and with our assistant coaches. You know, we're in a league now where, you know, I wanted to make sure, learning from what's gone on in the past, that our players understood that, hey, listen, you can say whatever you're feeling, it's not going to be held against you by the organization from a standpoint of you're not going to be on this team. The only way you're not going to be on this football team is if you're not good enough, you know what I'm saying, to play, or you know, you're not helping us win, you know. But that was something that, you know, I wanted to reiterate to the players, and I was, you know, fortunate that Dave Caldwell came on, reiterated it. We all know Shad agrees with it. And I think that's an important time, especially in the industry that we're in. So, you know, we took those steps, and like I said before, we you know, Marcus Pollard, you know, who's our player development guy, has done a great job along with Tad Dickman, our PR guy, you know, on gathering this information from the players, you know, keeping these discussions going, and, you know, creating, you know, sustainability, which is the number one thing that we want to do. We don't want to see, you know, this opportunity fade. And I think that comes from the players and the assistant coaches. So, you know, now I have to look at my role as the head coach or the leader of creating, you know, these platforms or this availability that, you know, we do, you know, have the freedom to express it. We do have the freedom to bring up some thoughts and bring up some action plans that we can use our position, you know, in the community, you know, being part of the NFL and really working on trying to create change, knowing that, you know, it's going to take time, and it's a, and Chris Connolly said it's, you know, it's a marathon, and, you know, change, you know, for change. And I think that, you know, we're discussing it as a movement, you know what I'm saying? You know, we got to continue to keep, you know, pushing and keep moving and keep having, you know, conversations, whether, you know, uncomfortable or not, you know, to bring this type of awareness. And it's gone on for too long. And, you know, I've got to look at myself and go through, you know, what's my part, you know, what can I do, you know, a better job of to support and listen to our players and assistant coaches.
I'm fascinated because I've been around a lot of head coaches, and the instinct for a head coach is to always be football because it's a year-round thing. Did you know immediately when you heard the conversation started, you know, in that first Zoom meeting, hey, this is going to be different? And was it just sort of organically of, hey, football's got to set aside a little bit? Because, as you know, as a head coach, usually it's all ball all the time.
I think it was like that because that's how we grew up. You know, I think that there's times I was fortunate enough to, you know, see things growing up. I've been fortunate enough to live in to have gone to school and played football with a very diverse group. So, you know, for me, I've seen it. And I think as a white male, you know, you say, you know, what, you know, I could have done more, you know, what could I have done? And I mean, you go back and you're like, well, I'm there. I supported, you know, my friends. I supported this. You know, but you're always saying, hey, what can I do more? Because, you know, if in my life, my priorities are, you know, God, family, you know, football, and then social life. Well, this is more towards what my values are in family. And, you know what I'm saying? So it's above, you know what I'm saying, for me. I can't speak for anybody else. I can't speak for any other head coaches. But for me, it's above that. Because, you know, and I kind of went back, and I went, you know, my whole thing in college, when I was in college as a coach, and I was fortunate to be around a guy named Homer Rice, who was an AD at Georgia Tech when I was there. And his big thing was, you know, development of the players, you know, development, you know, obviously not, we're not talking about on the field, but development, you know, off the field. And for me, you know, I was, my philosophy was, you know, I was going to develop the person first, you know, before I even started to work on developing the football player. And I think, you know, when I look back, I think sometimes this job and the things around it, you can kind of lose sight of that. You know, I know for me, you know, there's points where I wish I would have done a better job, you know, so I've learned a lot, and I want to get back to that. Now, you know, when I say that, sometimes it's just about listening, you know what I'm saying? Being able to listen, to be able to be empathetic to what, you know, people are going through, to, you know, try to understand. I think since the murder of George Floyd, I think that, you know, I've learned a lot, you know, about myself. I've learned a lot about, you know, my position and what I can do. And I think it's been something that, again, for me, it's moving forward. It's pushing me to do a better job and to be a better person. At the end of the day, you know, football is going to be taken away from me. You know, at one point or another, it was taken away from me when I was a player, you know, not being good enough or injuries. It's going to be taken away from me as a coach, whether it be my age or not being able to do a good enough job. But the one thing that's never going to be taken away from me is, you know, who I am as a person, you know, what my character is and what my values are. People can always, you know, attack you for decisions you made on third down or during a game or, and that's fine. I totally understand that. That's part of what the job is. I never had a problem with that. And you know that, John.
Sure.
But the one thing I never want people to ever question, you know, is you know, personally is my character or who I am. So, you know, I guess it goes beyond, you know, the logo of the league, goes beyond the logo of the team. It goes beyond, you know, your primary responsibility in your job, and it takes what takes precedent is your ability as a, you know, a person. I'm not looking to be remembered or any. I really feel like at the end of the day, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do to help and support these players. It's the right thing, therefore it can never be wrong.
Have you learned anything about your team as a whole through all this? Not just in terms of what they've been telling you about what they've gone through in their lives, but I guess how they've handled this. Pollard and Rubisky, they both said that they had learned something about these guys as men, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've learned about, you know, a lot. I mean, to put one thing out there, would be a discredit to all the players, you know what I'm saying, that I've spoken. But, you know, I think the awareness is a very, very high level. I would think the experiences of things that have occurred in their lives, you know what I'm saying, growing up, that as a white male, I never even put any thought into it. Which is discouraging, you know, I mean, I, you know, for me, that how I approach things, you know, I've always had a philosophy. You can never walk in someone else's shoes. I've always believed that no matter what the situation is, but I did always think that you could have some type of understanding, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, or you get it or whatever word you want to say. But the way our players, I've been impressed with the way they've been able to communicate their feelings, their knowledge on history, their hunger for change. And now, you know, we're going to put those things in place and we're going to see, you know, if we're going to be able to sustain it and be able to do something. So I look at, you know, I look at everything as what's doing right as a human being first, mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, football's down the road, and that's how I feel.
I know you talked on your season-ending conference call about the need for having things in place to make sure that conversation, and as Conley said, that it's not a moment but a movement. You will be putting things into place to make sure that this doesn't fade out, I guess is the word you use. And that's the difficult thing about something like this, is sort of maintaining the structure for momentum to continue, right?
Well, that's where I look at where my role comes in. You know what I'm saying? As a head coach, the one thing that I do have the ability to do is be able to structure, you know, our days, you know, what we do. And the number one thing for the players have been, you know, sustainability, and the assistant coaches. So you know, in my role as a head coach, you know, what can I do to help that? Now, I came up with a bunch of ideas that I had given to Marcus and spoke to some of the assistant coaches about, you know, because, you know, what I don't want to do is I want to see what the players would like first, you know what I'm saying? Because they're the ones that are the most important. And then, okay, for sustainability, all right, what are we going to do from when we leave this team meeting today until we report, you know, whatever time that may be? And, you know, the question was to Marcus is, hey, do we have this open forum that we are going to talk about these issues, about, you know, where we are with our, you know, where our thoughts and where our action plans and how we're progressing? So, you know, it's not a vacation, you know what I'm saying, from it, because, you know, these players live this daily, you know, these emotions are with them, you know, 24/7. So, you know, we wanted to build a platform, you know, for that. And then, you know, during the season, I heard, you know, a lot of players say, hey, we've got to keep this going. And during the season, it's difficult because of, you know, whatever's happening on the field, between the lines, you know, your body's tired, you're beat up, you know, job security is always, you know, being talked about, you know. And a lot of times we do things where, you know, okay, hey, listen, today's end, you know, everything ends at 5:30. And then at 5:30, we're going to have the team room open for whoever wants to come in. And this is what we're going to talk about. Well, you're not going to get the same type of effect,
right,
you know, at the end of the day that you're going to have to. So, you know, I'm looking at, you know, what we're going to do during training camp. Looking at, you know, bringing in, you know, speakers that understand what some have an understanding of the NFL, you know, because that's something that's over all of our heads, you know what I'm saying, as far as the platform. So I want to make sure that they understand what the players go through. I want to make it to where it's helpful for the players, but I also need to keep listening to them and see who those best people are, you know, and the assistant coaches. You know, and then build it into our schedule so we are constantly reminded of that. You know, that we are, you know, when it's time, you know, when we're working on football, we are. But, hey, when we're working on this, we're good. Because if you don't, it's gonna trickle into everything that you do. And, you know, you want to say as a head coach, hey, we want to have a balance on everything. But you have to understand at times that balance, you know, is going to be moving, that scale. You know, and you just got to know in the times when that scale needs to move in the directions, you know what I'm saying, that are important for the team. And usually you get that from the players. So, you know, I wanted to do a better job than what I've done in the past of, you know, being able to have these type of discussions, have these types of forums, you know, for our players. And make no bones about it, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to really cut into what we have to get done as far as our jobs. And that's the one thing I think people can, you know, get confused on. Like, oh, my God, is it a football team or is it, you know, an activist group? Well, it's both. You know, we're gonna make change. We're going to make movement. And we're going to play football and put an excellent quality out on that field and win football games.
We've talked for a while about a really significant offseason and still haven't gotten into the coronavirus, which is amazing. It shows you how much things have changed even the last couple of weeks. But I do think people are curious about just how you handled the very beginning of the coronavirus in terms of doing this virtually. And, you know, you talked a little bit about the anxiety of that. And it sounds like that process, meaning the communication with the team, the players, went a lot better than you initially thought it might.
It did, and I think what caused my anxiety was my lack of knowledge in, you know, in technology.
You're like my mom.
Yeah, and, you know, but, you know, through our IT department and our video department, played a major role in getting these things set up. You know, they did an outstanding job, you know, in a tough time where, you know, this has never been done before. You know, the NFL and the process of a draft. I mean, I couldn't, there was no issues, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it was, it was, uh, it's truly amazing. And people will point towards the leadership, you know what I'm saying, to give a lot of credit towards the leadership of being able to, you know, accomplish those things. But it's really the people below them, you know, the people that are actually, you know, wiring your home and wiring your
team.
You know, the guys that are doing something. That's why I give so much credit to the IT and the video guys. So, you know, they're just outstanding. And we're very fortunate to have a great bunch, a group where, you know, sometimes your IT and video guys are a little bit, you know, separation between them. But, you know, our guys came together and did a hell of a job. So, you know, I really appreciate that. And then once it starts to go, for me, because of the way I think, and I process, I was like, okay, what do we normally get done in our meetings? You know what I'm saying? With the players, let's try to keep that the same. So as far as installation and everything. Now, a lot of times in these meetings, in the end, once you start practicing, a lot of those meetings are part of, you know, really looking at the practice tape, you know, and making corrections from the tape, you know, with the players or walking through with them. So, you know, from the physical part of being able to be together, that's the one thing we missed. But, you know, we were able to get everything in, and then we tried to substitute, you know, some of the actual stuff on the field with a lot of individual tape and challenging our players individually, you know what I'm saying, what they can do on their own in a safe environment if they have one, to go ahead and start doing it, which would be able to help them. So now you have that planned out. And then now the next phase is, I think, even more challenging because, you know, you had something taken away from you, you know, with OTAs and the mini camp, you know, which is on the field. So there's a lot of things, the players' progression, you know, seeing who's getting better, seeing who truly can understand what needs to be done. The evaluation process, not just from the coaches on, you know, who's you know, has the ability to play well or make this team, but also from our personnel department. What I'm challenged now is to go back and, one, the challenge of the operational of a safe environment, which a lot of procedures are still coming out, you know, what we need to do when the players report. So there's a challenge for, well, just logistics on, you know, where these players are moving and going. I think that we're probably in better shape than most teams because we do have, we are in a stadium. There is a ton of room there. I think it's a lot of times we complain about not having windows, but, you know, this is the one time where being in a stadium and the space that it creates is helpful. You know, we've got challenges to how we disinfect these areas, you know what I'm saying? So they maintain, you know, a high level of health. So all those things come into play, but then when you start thinking about the football end of it is, okay, your initial thoughts are you want to jump right in and start right away. You know what I'm saying? Like just go from 0 to 100.
Right.
Well, that's not going to, we all might want to do that as coaches, but that's not what's best for our players. So, you know, when we come back, we're going to be looking at, you know, things of, you know, splitting the field, double reps, you know, jog through so we can get them and kind of build our players up and try to catch up, you know, quite a bit on the reps that we've lost, knowing that our window or a window of opportunity to make this team is going to be a lot shorter, you know, than in years past, and it's very unique. And, you know, the good thing about it is I think a lot of people have said, you know, I've heard other coaches talk about, well, you know, I got a veteran team. They're going to know what to do, know how to handle themselves, be ready, you know. And I started thinking, well, we might be in trouble. We got probably the youngest team, you know what I'm saying, in the NFL. But the work that these guys have put in, the young guys, I'm not talking about the guys that have played before, you know, has been really over the top in a good sense. And, you know, they're all hungry and they all understand that there's an opportunity and they understand that it's going to be a smaller window. And, you know, they're going to come in ready to go. So I think it's going to just help the whole football team and us as coaches. But what I have to do, what I'm challenged with, is putting together this operational schedule for health and safety for everyone that's sure. involved in the football end of it. And then, you know, I got to put the schedule where our players are able to build up where we have any setbacks.
I'm curious about the way you communicate because you're used to standing in front of a room and talking to players. It looks like there could be a situation where you're on Zoom meetings communicating with players even during the season. Does the way that you talk to guys, does your ability to look somebody in the eye, things like that, is that a big difference, or am I overstating that?
I think that's just human nature. You know what I'm saying? I think that, you know, at first it's like, you know, at first we had the phone call where I could take the phone and go like, oh my God, what the hell? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To my mouth, you know, then we went to Zoom video, you know what I'm saying? Or FaceTime, you know, which is a much better, you know what I'm saying? Human interaction. Mm-hmm. It's probably the next best thing you have of not being there. I think that, you know, we've also discussed and talked about, you know, some of these larger meetings of, you know, offense, defense, special teams, and team, you know, logistically, we've talked about how do we lift in the weight room, but, you know, from a standpoint of the meetings and the large meeting groups, we've discussed of, you know, doing it, even though I may be 70 feet away or in the next room, you know, we might have players in their meeting rooms having a full team meeting. You know, or we might have players at home, you know, at night instead of having a team meeting at night, just do it like this. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be able to talk with great confidence in doing that if we hadn't, you know, been doing it now for a long period of time. And like you said, at first, I know for myself, I felt a little bit uncomfortable, you know, just because I've never done this before. But quickly, it became like an afterthought, you know, right. became easy to do, talk to the team this way. It became easy to talk to media this way. But, you know, I've always enjoyed and look forward to actually being in front of a room with a bunch of people in there. So you can get a feel for, you know, body language and what they're doing. But I think that, you know, as long as when you're talking about football, that doesn't affect me as much as when you're talking about, you know, other things that you want to bring up and try to make sure you drive those points home.
This is kind of a jump away in terms of topics, but I hadn't talked to you since Don Shula died. I know you played for him. I was curious your thoughts on the man, what influence he had over you, and just say something about him, if you will.
Yeah, he had quite a bit of influence in the short period of time that we were together. I think that, you know, it's interesting, you know, by that time, you know, we're talking about, you know, 1987 and 1988.
Right.
You know, he was everyone, you know, knew that you're playing for, you know, a Hall of Fame coach, a special guy, a guy that had a ton of influence, you know what I'm saying, in the NFL, and a ton of influence on a lot of the rules, you know, that were put in place. And, you know, he had a standard, and it was high. And, you know, when you reported to camp, you know, because back then it was different, like, you know, in the off season, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of money. So a lot of guys would just go home and work out and work, you know, believe it or not, sure. Have other jobs or be with their families. And then, you know, we'd have these mini camps, and the people that were in town would work out. But, you know, we always had, it was kind of like how baseball had it, which I always thought was great, because I don't remember us having a lot of injuries, meaning that, you know, the skilled guys always reported early, you know, kind of like the pitchers and catchers, you know, and they were able to kind of get themselves going a little bit. It wasn't at the highest competition level at that point, because the whole team's not there. Everybody's just kind of getting a feel for, you know, being able to the practice time, being able to run around, you know, how to condition their bodies, all that. And then the linemen would come in. So we'd have a couple of those camps, two or three of them, I can't remember, you know, in the off season. But then, you know, when we reported, we had a bunch of exercises that we'd have to go through. So we'd have, you had to do X amount of pull-ups at a certain time, X amount of sit-ups, jump rope. You had a bench, a shoulder press, flexibility. There was, you know, conditioning tests, and you acquired points. And, you know, if you maxed out and you got, the best grade, you got 5 points. If you didn't, you got one, you know. A couple of years after when I started coaching, I was with the Jets, and we played Miami. So every once in a while, I'd run into Coach Shula. You know, and I would ask him, I'd say, you know, why did you do those things? He said, well, Charlie Winter was the general manager, and he said, well, you know, at the bottom of the roster, you know, Charlie and I would get together, and if we were, split on a player, you know, two players, and we couldn't really, you know, didn't have a strong feeling either way of who was going to help us, you know, we'd go back to this chart, you know, that we did, and that's what would be the tipping, you know, tip scales, you know. So, you know, I thought it was interesting just how he did things. I mean, you know, obviously he was a disciplinarian. He expected a lot. He expected a lot of the players, and he always delivered. So, you know, I think he was, you know, one of those people that I've been fortunate enough to be around, to hear them speak, to hear them, to watch them coach, to understand, you know, the principles that have made him so successful. Mm-hmm. And be able to instill some of that in a game that, you know, or a locker room that is constantly changing and evolving. So, you know, I feel very fortunate to be part of that. And there's a lot of players that were on that team that were with Coach Shula for a long period of time. And I think they would also say they've had, you know, nothing but great respect for him as a man and the things he did for us as players. Because, you know, if you're looking for someone in your life to push you where you can't push yourself, he was that guy. He was going to get the best out of you. I remember in 87, I think it was 87 or 88, that training camp was, and I know that we as older players always like to talk about those training camps, but and we had doubles every day except Sunday. Coach Shula was, you know, had, you know, was very strong in his faith. So on Sunday was our day off, but, you know, we go out in the morning, we'd be in full pads, do the runs, you know, in the afternoon, we go out in helmets and shoulder pads. And we're talking about, you know, we can understand that here in Jacksonville, but we're talking about some serious heat, you know what I'm saying, down in Miami. And, you know, I just always remember, you know, I didn't know my roommate at the time, Chris Conlon, was from Penn State. You know, we had the schedule up in our hotel room where we stayed, and we were just trying to get through one part of the day. I mean, it was just like, okay, let's get through this first practice. We made it, you know. And there was a point in this training camp where, you know, as a player that hadn't made a team yet, you know, that's your number one goal. But I saw that goal switching for me. So that goal went from, you know, trying to make the team to just surviving, you know. And, you know, when your body is banged up that bad and you just keep pushing yourself, you're like, because there's days you're like, there's no way I can make it. And you just go out there and you do it and you get it done. And we ran all the time and did that stuff. And I've always said that, you know, there's a lot of things that I'll look back to in my life that, you know, have been challenging and have been tough. But I remember after that training camp, I remember that the influence of that camp, not only as a football player, but the influence on that camp was going to have in my life, meaning that, you know, I constantly got to push myself. You know, I really don't know my own limitations, you know, and it taught me so much about myself. And it taught me a lot about the team, my teammates, you know, that I learned to appreciate and go back to in times of where I feel there's nothing left. I can't do anymore. I can't push myself. So I always kick myself back to that time, you know, to keep pushing myself to go forward.
And you can't really put players through that kind of camp now, right? Or can you?
No, and I think there's a lot of reasons for it. And I think, you know, it's the same thing that I've gone through. I mean, you know, there was a certain way that I played and was brought up, coached, that, you know, I obviously brought with me to, you know, my career in coaching that has evolved, you know, because of, you know, player safety and the athletes that are changing. So I don't look back and say, you know, these guys nowadays couldn't do that or they would be better if they did that. I think that, you know, steps were taken, you know, as a league for the future health and safety for our players is not, no doubt, the right direction. I don't look back and things that coaches coaches had asked me to do or anything, look back and say, gosh, I can't believe they put me in that situation. I don't feel that way at all. There's no animosity towards that. You know, if anything, I found a positive, you know, for me, I can't speak for everybody else, you know, and pushing myself that much, where truly it is mind over matter.
Final question, specific to this year's Jaguars team. I know you haven't seen them on the field yet, and it's been an unusual part of the offseason, but is there anything that you can tell me that you like about this bunch that fans haven't gotten a chance to see that maybe is just unique, you know, or is it too early to tell because you haven't seen them on the field?
I think you know, it's a difficult question from a standpoint of, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm excited about, you know, but I haven't seen them with my eyes yet. And I think that, you know, it'd be unfair for me to, you know, paint a picture of the actual results, you know, for the fan. And, you know, I've always been someone that's taken pride in just saying, you know, exactly what's in my heart and on my mind, and not trying to be too dramatic or overblown or come across as phony that I'm trying to sell and things of that nature. But I will tell you what I'm excited about. I think it's going to be interesting this year with the amount of youth that we have on this team, and how hungry they are, and, you know, for the most part, how well they've picked things up. I think it's going to challenge our older players, you know, our veteran players. You know, these guys are really good communicators. They have a great sense of respect for the people that have played this game, but they're going to come in here and compete. I think that we have, you know, people more so on the offensive side of the ball, you know, that are playmakers, more types of guys that are playmakers than we've had before. Some of them are guys that were with us that are still developing. Some of them are guys that are going into the final year of their contract. You know, some of them are guys that are coming in free agency and in college. You know, so some of them have proven to be playmakers in this league, but have proven that, you know, they've had a little bit of injury. So, you know, we've got to make sure that those players stay healthy. And the young guys, you know, have the ability to do it. And now it's just a matter of where we can put them and how much they can retain. You know, I think Dave and I have had discussions. We're constantly still looking. It's not like, hey, we're set with this 90 and going. You know, if we feel there's any way to improve this team, Dave and I have had great communication. You know, talked about multiple players that, you know, are either out there or may, you know, get cut, you know, for salary cap, whatever it may be. You know, so these conversations with our personnel department go on all the time. So I'm excited. Defensively, I think that, you know, we lost players, and I think we're able to fill them. Some of them we filled with veteran guys. You know, we're talking about the linebacker situation. Mm-hmm. And some of them we filled with rookies that we've drafted that we're expecting big things out of. So, you know, a lot of that is going to be on their performance and what they do. We put an emphasis on, you know, stopping the run, which is something that hurt us. We're able to go out and stick by a plan. You know, Dave and I, you know, presented the plan to Shad, and, you know, and the coaches and the scouts, and we really stuck by it. You know, the type of people we wanted to bring in, the type of style that we wanted to play. I feel that we've addressed some needs. Obviously, you always want better depth, but, you know, I think I'm excited to see what these guys can do. You know, I think a lot of people on the outside are saying, oh, this team's not going to be good. This team's not going to be that. You know, we hear that. It's not like we shut that stuff off, you know, but it couldn't be any further from the truth. I mean, I really, really feel really comfortable, you know what I'm saying, coaching this football team. And I feel really good about, you know, when we get out there, you know, getting the best out of the team, and the team getting the best out of me and the coaches. So I'm actually super excited. I'd say everything. Hey, you know, don't believe what you read. Let us go out there and prove it to you.
Doug, you're always generous with your time, and you're always fascinating to talk to. I appreciate you doing this, and I look forward to seeing you when I see you. Who knows when that'll be, but I look forward to it. And thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, John.
I think what strikes me about Doug in the last couple of weeks is the same thing, maybe a continuing storyline of what everybody in the media, and I think fans who really follow the team closely, have seen with Doug. in that he came in, Dave, with this real reputation when he came to the Jaguars of being a tough guy to deal with, of being a tough nut to crack, if you will, and really being hard to reach. And with the Jaguars, man, he has been anything but that. And I don't know if it's always the most comfortable thing in the world for him to open up, but he really is the guy who has worn his heart on his sleeve, to use an awful cliche, since he's joined this organization or become the coach. And it feels like the last few weeks, he's really shown people, I don't know, a side of himself that maybe he didn't know was there. I'm just very impressed with him as a person and how he handles being the head coach of this team and how he's handled this the last few weeks and even the last few months.
Anybody that works in the NFL or even I can relate that this offseason has been tough, and preparing for a season you don't know what's going to be is tough. And as far as Doug, it's funny, kind of tell this story, is when he first got the job with us, I know some people at the Buffalo Bills who do my job, and they were like, hey, you know, coaches shows and scheduling thing, hey, it might be tough. He's kind of a tough guy to deal with sometimes. And I've had completely the opposite experience with Doug. He's been professional, easy to work with, willing to do whatever you need him to do. And I really like him as a person. And how he's handled these last, I guess it's been a month now, with everything. I mean, he's handled with grace and has really kind of put out what he thinks, which is hard for coaches to do because, you know, they have to answer to a lot of people, whether it's fans, ownership, their own players. And you get the idea that, you know, Doug is genuine about how he feels about this social justice movement that's happened last few months. And also, even before that, when questions in his media conferences would come up about COVID, you could tell. I mean, this whole thing affected him.
Right.
And it's pretty, and you know, so much is like made of like Bill Belichick at the Patriots, who extremely successful, or whatever. But I don't think many people know who he is. Right. And it's just, you know, there's always that stark contrast, you know, of coaches, and Doug comes off to me like, you know, just not, I won't say a regular guy, but just a guy trying to do his job, and it is very relatable, I think is what I'm trying to say.
And you're never sure when you do podcasts, when you do content, as people call things now, you're never sure if everybody listens to everything because there's so much out there. But for people who are maybe listening to this and heard Doug Marrone talk, I think if you want some real insight into the person and how he's handled the last few weeks, which for a head coach, this has not been an easy time. It is not an easy thing to, I don't want to use the word navigate, but to know how to handle with 60 different players on your team. If you go back and listen to the Ozone podcast with Terry Rubisky and Marcus Pollard last week, they said a lot. They talked, they were almost laughing during it because they continued to go back to praising Doug Marrone and how he's handled this, and that the Jaguars' approach couldn't have been the approach it was without Doug. And I really didn't talk to Doug during the podcast about that because he's not the kind of person who's going to answer a question real well if he's being praised. It's just not, I've been around him long enough, that's not going to get a great answer. But the things that Marcus and Terry were saying about Doug were things that you can't fake. And they were talking about Doug Marrone in situations that he can't fake in terms of how he's approached this, how he has had conversations with both of them and other black players about the things going on. I don't think you can be a phony or fake the things that they were saying about him. And I think if people really are interested in what Doug Marrone is like, maybe listen to that podcast and they can get a real appreciation for it. So really with this podcast, Dave, there wasn't a whole lot, I think, that we could say more than Doug had said about his comment. So we'll probably just leave it at that. I appreciate people listening to the Ozone Podcast. I appreciate that Joe Fortunato and David Candace for making it sound good. We will see you guys next week, and I hope this one didn't suck.